Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks. You have reached the Wise Women Media Radio Show, and we did have a song queued up, and for some reason it is not working. So I'm going to refresh the page and try to get this song going again. And here goes. I'm going to try. Well, I guess we're not meant to play that song. So let me start out with just saying that we have Lisa Polo and Andrea. Andrea, can you state your last name? Because I wasn't sure of the pronunciation of it, but can you state it clearly for us?
Yeah, it's Vanskoy.
Okay. And the organization that Lisa and Andrea have been working with is called the Anti-Surrender Committee. And they're going to tell us all about it, but we do want to take a second to give a heads up about our sponsors, which are Here Be Monsters, Roundtree 7, the Hoodoo Blog, Daughters of Isis, and Power New Media and Public Relations. We also want to encourage people. I'm trying to get the chat up as well, but if I can't get the chat up during this show, please feel free to call in at the number right on the page where the radio show is if you have any questions for Lisa and Andrea during this interview. And I'm going to turn the floor over to them and have them tell you all, the listeners, all about the Anti-Surrender Committee. And fill us in, I think the most importantly, is what it does and how it happened, how it was born.
Well, Lisa, do you want me to start or do you want to start?
You can start.
Okay. I retired recently, actually in January of this year, from a very, very prolific and busy 7-year writing career. Animals have always been my passion, but I was so busy doing conventions and interviews and doing the travel circuit, book signings, things like that, that I never got to devote the time that I wanted to animals. I did what I could, but I felt that it was never enough. So when I decided to retire this year, the first thing I did was throw myself into animal activism, environmental activism, and humanitarianism. And I decided that I was going to start trying to help people any way I could, because we live in an area where a lot of people don't have a lot of money. And I always hate to see the stories on Facebook where people have had to give up their animals because they can't feed them. People shouldn't have to part with their beloved companions just because they've hit hard times. So I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I decided that I was going to, out of my own pocket, start helping people. Well, a mutual friend of mine and Lisa's introduced the two of us, and Lisa and I hit it off to the point that at our first meeting, we were already practically reading each other's minds, finishing each other's sentences, and we were like, okay, this is it. We are doing it. Lisa came up with the name. I had put what was going to become the Anti-Surrender Committee under the little umbrella of all of my activism that I do. And Lisa said, well, how about we change the name of the page to the Anti-Surrender Committee? And I was like, great. Next thing you know, we've got a logo. We're having a meet and greet. People are offering to help us. And it was just wonderful. Lisa has been invaluable to me because I'm not used to finding people that are willing to really put forth the effort to help with things. People are really good at lip service. But when it comes time to actually get down to working and doing things, you look around and a lot of times people who swore their devotion to you aren't there. And with Lisa, it was not like that. She and I have just taken off like a couple of rockets with this. And we are enjoying it. We really are. And so what we do is we try to help as many people as we can. We accept donations of food, pet bowls, harnesses, leashes, whatever you can think of. And we do everything out of our own pockets. We are not a 501c3, nor do we want to become one, because we don't want government politics interfering with what we're doing, and we're not a business, and we're technically not a charity. We are just two women who don't want people to have to give up their companions. So we're just doing everything on our own. And so far, the response has just been overwhelming. I don't think either one of us ever thought that we were going to have this kind of response to what we're doing. It's just been unbelievable. And the people that we've helped, that's the reward. We've seen so many, Lisa and I both have seen so many terribly run, I'm trying to be kind here, terribly run organizations that claim they want to help animals, but you email them, they won't email you back. You call them, they won't return phone calls. You try to network with them, they won't do anything. It's like jumping through hoops, cutting through government red tape. It's ridiculous. And so what Lisa and I do is we take all of that away, and the people who benefit are the people who contact us. No red tape, no hoops. You call the telephone number that is listed on the site, on my business card, you get me. You don't get somebody saying, oh, yeah, well, I don't know what's going on with that. I'm going to have somebody call you back. No, you talk to me. You email Lisa. You get a response from Lisa. You don't get a response 2 or 3 days, a week, a couple of weeks with excuses, oh, yeah, I've been really busy. No, you hear from Lisa or I, either one. If not immediately, within just an hour or so, probably at most. And like I said, trying to find someone that has that great of a work ethic for something like this, I didn't think it was possible. Lisa has just been invaluable, and I think we're a pretty awesome team.
I think so too.
So tell me how you all saw the need, how that came to be. For those of you that don't know about the Florida area that we live in, let me fill in here. We are probably one of the 4 locations in the United States that has more homelessness because we have great weather down here. We have also one of the weakest economies. They were just recently in a report comparing Tampa to the city of Detroit in the realm of how many people are unemployed and how many people are living under the poverty level. So I don't think people understand that this is a systemic, this is happening to metro areas all over the country, but right now Tampa is already in a pretty precarious position, and that puts families in a precarious situation with their pets, because if they can no longer get food and maintain a roof over their head for themselves, then they can't do that for their pets either. And there's some really, really sad stories out there, and it breaks my heart to even think about some of these choices that these families have had to make. But you all have provided these families with an option of getting help so they don't have to make those decisions, or at least they don't have to make them right away or be forced to if, for instance, they lose their place to live. So fill me in on how you all realized there was a need.
Well, Lisa, okay, you go ahead. You work in a vet's office, so you go ahead and you say what you've seen, and then, because I've talked enough, you take over for a little bit.
Okay, I do work in a veterinary office, and a lot of folks also have lost their homes due to foreclosure, and some folks, instead of trying to locate or make a situation where they can bring their pet with them, they're wanting to give them up. And we had a story of a little dachshund that was surrendered to us only because the people foreclosed on their home, and I guess, I suppose, where the family, where they were moving to, they wouldn't allow dogs. They've had the dog for 12 years. It broke my heart. I felt the deep sadness from this dog, and I felt it was my duty to find a home for her. And I did everything in my power to network and let everybody know about her. And just the feeling of being able to locate someone that I knew was the right person for her made me feel so good. And I think about all the pets that have to endure this, and I want to try to prevent that as much as possible, you know, as much as I can. And that's what opened my eyes to that, and seeing and social networking. Also, a lot of folks post different stories or different pets that are needing a home, and everybody's wanting to surrender their pets for some reasons that are they shouldn't be either. But anyway, those are the things that made me think about wanting to help.
Yeah, I realized there was a problem back when we were leaving an apartment complex just within the past year and a half, and Leon had gone by a building, and he pretty much knew the maintenance guys. For those of you that don't know, Leon is my partner, and one of the maintenance guys had told him he was cleaning up a mess, and Leon didn't know the extent of it until he walked into the apartment with the cleaning guy, and whatever had happened to the leaseholder or the person who was living there, we don't know whether he left and abandoned the apartment or what had happened, or maybe he had been arrested and gone to jail and didn't have a network out there of people to help him. But in any case, the dog was left in the apartment. He was probably there for 3 weeks before he died, and the apartment was a mess. And when Leon came home and told me this, I mean, this was just two buildings away from us. He said, "Oh my God!" He said, "I saw that dog at the window barking like he needed help," and he said, "No, I didn't." And he felt so guilty, and we just sat and cried about it. I mean, it was just—I started to realize this is Tampa, and people, things happen. You know, the people are locked up for no reason. They're locked up even if they don't get jobs because the parole office is looking for them. There are no jobs or very few. People don't have resources. So they're looking for resources. And one of the most beautiful things is that our pets become a part of our family. And when we have to give them up, it's just on top of all the trauma that somebody might be experiencing, having to make choices they don't want to make, that just becomes more of the trauma, giving up a loved one. And
it really does. It really does. And for my part, too, I moved over to Pasco County from the Orlando area. That's where I'm originally from, 18 years ago. And I have seen a definite decline in the Pasco County area. When I moved over here, because when my husband and I got married, he said, "Do you want me to move over there or do you want to move over here?" I can tell you the area I live in is the quaint small town that your town used to be. And I said, "Oh, well, I'll move over then." And when I first moved to Pasco County, it was idyllic over here. It was rural and it was quiet. I remember going to the mall and it was all elderly people. And I looked at my husband and said, "Where's all the young people?" And he started laughing because there's quite an age difference between my husband and I. And I've seen that pretty little place that I moved to 18 years ago decline. And unfortunately, there are so many people who think that their pets are disposable. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case. "Oh, well, I can't afford it anymore, so I'll have to take it to the shelter." And that shouldn't even be a consideration. If you're not going to take your child to a shelter and drop them off, if you're not going to throw your child away, you shouldn't throw your dog or your cat away. That shouldn't even be a consideration. And yet that's usually the first thing to go through people's minds. I have five cats. I've said that I would live out of my car for the rest of my life if I had to. There is no way I would give up any of my babies. No way at all.
That's how I feel too.
In a car, if I had to. And unfortunately, a lot of people just don't even think twice. We don't want people to have an excuse to give away their pets. As long as you're going to take care of your pet, we'll help you if we can. But we're not going to enable you, and we're not going to do anything like that. We want to help people. That's what we're here for. And we also want people to know that they can call us. Call us if you need a leash. Call us if you need a pet food bowl. You know, there's no shame in asking for help. There's shame in throwing what is supposed to be basically one of your children away.
Right, right. I think another thing that really works against a lot of people that are renting in this area is the fact that a lot of the places that they possibly could live in that might be in a safe neighborhood or, you know, a great place for, you know, their kids to go to school. They can't get into a lot of these places because they're in certain places there's breed restrictions. And, you know, they actually take a list of breeds and say, we don't accept these in our rental apartments or rental homes.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, the German Shepherd, we had a beautiful German Shepherd, the most elegant pet I ever had. He was absolutely his looks and his makeup and his personality and everything. But he had been bred for the Tampa Police Department, and we happened to get him out of the litter. We had first pick of that particular litter. Anyway, I thought a lot of the time he must be really bored with us because he should have been a cop dog, you know. But we just adored him, and he's gone now. But there were a lot of places that we could not rent because we had him. So we tried a couple times renting where we told the potential, you know, property owners, well, he's a Belgian Shepherd because Belgian Shepherds weren't on the restricted breed list. But German Shepherds were, pit bulls, wolf dogs. There was a number, chows, I think, were on the list. There was a number of dogs that were not acceptable.
I wouldn't have a problem lying about that either, because I don't care what anyone's excuse is. This is me getting on my animal rights soapbox, because I am a staunch animal rights activist. This is me getting on my soapbox. I don't care what anyone owns or who anyone thinks they are. Just like you have no right to discriminate against a person based on their ethnicity, their skin color, or anything else, people have no right to discriminate against dogs, cats, or any other breed of animal based on what they are. That is pure stupidity.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. I think that's just a lack of knowledge on their part.
Sad thing is, it's willful ignorance, because all you have to do is read up on pets and see that if you pick long and hard enough, you're going to find something wrong with every breed of animal on the planet. Koala bears can slice you to ribbons with their fingernails. Okay, so does that mean that Australia should go on and let's kill every koala bear in Australia?
Right, they don't.
I mean, it's willful. I'm one of these people that I have no use for willful stupidity. And honestly, if you're going to make blanket statements like, oh, well, we won't allow pit bulls in this building because they're dangerous, or we won't allow chows in this building because they're dangerous, or German Shepherds or anything else, that's reprehensible. I can't even form the words to say how reprehensibly stupid that is.
Yeah. How can people reach you? Before we get too far into the conversation, I want to make sure that anybody listening, and we might want to do this a couple times during the show, how do people in need get in touch with you all, and then how do people that can help get in touch with you as well?
Lisa, do you want me to go ahead and give my information out?
Sure.
Okay, because I'm not only involved in animal rights and a former author, I'm also a minister, a doctor of motivation, and I'm getting ready to hopefully become certified to teach yoga. So my information is all over the internet, and I don't think I could hide if I wanted to. But I know not everyone wants their information plastered all over the internet or for everyone to know. That's why I asked Lisa if she wanted me to give mine out, because it's already out there anyway. Anyone can feel free to call me at area code 727-858-1861. My phone is on until roughly 8 p.m. every night. If you need help with cat food, dog food, we don't always have a huge supply of everything because we work on donations, but we do have some harnesses. We do have some cat pan liners. little scoopers, toys, things like that. We'll take stock if you call and tell us that you need something and see what we have. Or you can always email me at murgaine@gmail.com. And then we're also on Facebook under the Anti-Surrender Committee.
And that's like a Facebook like page. You have to like the page to actually be a member on that.
Right, right. That is our Facebook like page.
And on now on the pages, you're able to send messages to the admins of the page, so they can go to our page and click on message, and we'll get they can send us a private message directly to us.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And Lisa either one will answer you. Lisa is really good about, because I stay so busy throughout the day that sometimes Lisa will catch things that I don't. Quite a few times she does. So either she will answer you or I will answer you, either one. You can expect a rapid answer. Like I said, we're not one of these people that you call or you email and you don't hear back from us for 2 or 3 days or a week or something like that. We don't do that. You send us a message, you call, you get someone. That is how we work.
How many people do you think on average that you help during a week?
I know that when we first got started, I got, let's see, the first day I passed out flyers, Lisa and I came up with a great flyer that I passed out at the Volunteer Way. I took a stack up there. I had 5 phone calls in one day.
Wow.
And then the next day I had 4 or 5, and it just kept on. For the first probably 2 weeks that we put the flyer out, I was inundated with calls, which was fine. Because the lady at the Volunteer Way said, you understand that you're going to be flooded with calls. And I just kind of looked at her and grinned, and I said, ma'am, I'm a retired author. I'm also a minister. I'm used to being flooded with phone calls. Don't worry about it. So being flooded with those phone calls, that was the absolute highlight of those 2 weeks. That was what I wanted. Now, unfortunately, we did get a few people that we're not sure if they needed help. They simply wanted whatever we could give them, and it wasn't good enough what we could offer them at the time. We didn't have a large stockpile of food. We were running out and buying food as we could, and we didn't always have food. You have to understand, Lisa and I work out of our own pockets. I work a full-time job, and as soon as I'm hopefully very soon certified to teach yoga, that will be my 4th part-time job to help pay for this. Lisa also works. Everything we do is out of our own pockets. So we were doing this, and some people were ungrateful, but the majority of people were just unbelievable. Lisa and I both just sat and cried. We were just so glad to be able to help. And there's one little old man that he continuously calls me. And he says, I've called Channel 10 about you. I don't know how many times I told them that instead of all the junk they keep talking about, they need to come interview the two of you, because you're the only two in this area that are actually trying to help people. And I hung up with him and I started crying. I said, I've never in my life felt so appreciated. And that's really, Lisa and I aren't looking for fame, fortune, glory, and I think I can speak for Lisa in this aspect. We're not looking for any of that. What we're looking to do is we're looking to give people a hand up. We're looking to people to say, hey, don't give up your pet. Because I still think about the beautiful little pit bull online. His name was Achilles. And his little boy cried for him every single night. The father was out of work. I'm not sure what happened with the mother, but they couldn't afford to take care of him anymore. He was 7 years old. They had to take him to a shelter, and the grandmother was on Facebook begging people to please go adopt Achilles so he wouldn't be killed. I cried my eyes out every single day because that little boy, she said her little grandson, cried himself to sleep every single night because he couldn't understand why he didn't have his best friend anymore. He didn't understand why they had to give him away. And I told Lisa, I said, I don't ever want to read another story like that again. But unfortunately, we do. We read them all the time. There was a little old man who could no longer care for his dog. He didn't have the money to feed him any longer, and he took him to a shelter. And the person that posted on Facebook said, as they led his dog away, he stood at the counter and cried. And that breaks our hearts. So if we can keep that from happening, that is our reward. I mean, honestly, what more payment do you need than to keep something like that from happening?
Yeah, I'm thinking that people might want to know what happens when you do take your animal to a shelter. And Lisa had brought something up when she was visiting me here the other day that I think people should know about, but I'm just going to go ahead and state it. What I know, and then you all can tell me what the progression is once you bring an animal into a shelter and what happens and how that's determined. But what I have been able to find out is that when animals are brought into the shelter, the shelter and the people there, the employees, are not the ones that determine who gets put down. That is done by a numbers game through the county, which actually oversees what these shelters do, if they are county shelters. So this is not something like they go into the kennels and they just pick the ones that are, you know, maybe not social, maybe dangerous, or the ones that are old. They don't do that. This is strictly a numbers game. And it's very, very disheartening to think that the government, they want to be in our uterus, but they also want to be the ones that also dictate which animals are killed too. So people out there need to know the truth. And I don't know if you all have heard about this, but I had another guest on the show back several weeks ago, Carolyn Moss, who is an award-winning, Grammy-winning musician. Some of you may know her from back in the 70s and the 80s, but she has become an animal rights activist as well. And she ran an animal sanctuary up in Brooksville for quite a long time. And now the counties are actually going into these animal sanctuaries and finding any reason that they can to seize the animals. And later on, some of them they'll put down, of course, but the other ones that they know they can make money on, they sell in auctions. So,
let me tell you, if Lisa and I ever get rich and we open our own animal sanctuary, they better not even think about it, because I can promise you they'll regret the day they ever try.
Well, these people actually operate by not only theft but subversion. They're you know, animal agents. I don't know if they're fish and wildlife or whatever, but they walk around with all these things that look like permits that are not permits. But I encourage anybody to go back into the archives of my show and check out the one, I think it was probably a month ago, where I had Carolyn Moss on, and she discussed what had happened to her animal sanctuary. And it's still not over. She literally knew that the next thing that they were going to come after was her son, because it was just one of the ways that the cops or one of the authorities had put their hand on her son's head. And she said, he's next. In her mind, she was thinking this and intuited it. And she said, I got to get out of here. And they literally absolved everything that they had and packed everything up and moved out of state, very far away from here. So they're in Arizona now. And she said this whole thing is still not over, that she is still working on and this is happening. And actually, during that particular interview, another woman called in from Brooksville and described what had been happening to her as well. And the same thing had happened. So it was almost like a confirmation of what Carolyn Moss was describing. So, to all of you that have animals,
I don't have any doubt whatsoever. I don't have any doubt
to
whatsoever.
All of you that have animal stories out there that are listening, this too can happen to you. And if they want a reason to seize your animals, it could be just one little turd on the bottom of a cage. They'll take your animals. So pay heed to that, because we've already got people that have called in and discussed this, and people that have confirmed that this is happening, at least in Hernando County, but I'm sure it's happening other places as well. What do you think is the biggest challenge for families in regards to just maintaining a roof over their head right now? What is the biggest challenge? Providing a home for their
animals. Lisa, it's probably best if you answer this, because I'm, as everyone has probably noticed out there, I'm quite abrasive and quite a loudmouth, and I am most definitely not politically correct. I'm not really sure if anyone actually wants to hear what I have to say, because it's probably going to be considered quite ugly. So Lisa might want to answer this one, and if anyone absolutely wants to know my opinion, then I'll weigh in. But in the interest of not stirring the waters, Lisa might want to answer this one.
Can you repeat the question, Anita?
What do you think is family's biggest challenge for keeping the roof over their heads and maintaining their home so they can provide a home for their pets? What is the biggest challenge right now?
Having a job.
And would you say, I want people to know this, would you say maybe 1 in 4 don't have a job, or would you say that maybe 2 out of 4 are either jobless or underemployed?
Because that's what I would say.
That's what I'm seeing, too. I'm seeing about 50% of the people that I know are either not working or they're to the point of being underemployed where they can't pay their bills any longer.
That's what it is.
Because they're literally just working to put gas in their car.
Right.
You know, but they can't pay anything else. So we literally have become the slaves. We are slaves to the gas and oil companies. And I think, you know, it stems back to the corporate greed. All of this stems back to the corporate greed. But now we as a people have to figure out how to do things differently. So your organization has definitely figured out how to help in regards to pets. But are there other things that are happening with pets that are affected by the dire economic times that we're living in?
Okay, I'll go ahead and weigh in, and people can, I don't know if I can say the B word, so I won't. People can
say whatever you want. this is internet radio. You can say whatever you want. We're not governed by
them. Because I had people, I did a radio interview back when I was still an author, and the first thing the host said was, okay, I've heard about you and your mouth. Don't, okay? I said, all right. But, yeah, people can call me a bitch if they want, but I can tell you also that people need to stop passing the buck. They need to stop playing victim, and they need to start taking responsibility for what they're doing. If you've got enough money for booze, cigarettes, and dope, you've got enough money to feed your pets. And I have seen that there are quite a few people that they can't feed their pets, but I can promise you they don't go without a beer and they don't go without smokes. I cannot tell you how much that pisses me off. I would starve absolutely to death before my kids would go hungry. And my kids are my four-legged children. I don't have two-legged children, don't want two-legged children. My children have 4 legs, and I would starve to death myself before my children would go hungry. I gave food to a family. The man told me that they didn't have any food, and their little dog was going to go hungry, and I took them food, and of course I was happy to do it. But I got a real wake-up call when the woman practically staggered. She was so drunk. She walked over to me and hugged me, and the smell of booze nearly knocked me down. The
wow.
boyfriend, husband, whatever he was, had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and the minute I gave them the food, and they brought their little dog, and it was sweet, and it was precious, and I was happy that they did, and I was happy that I could feed it. But I also felt sorry for the dog, too, because then I saw where their priorities were, because the next words out of his mouth were, well, we got to run in the store here and pick up some cigarettes. And I thought, you're joking, right? Even if I did smoke, I would have to stop because I don't have the money for cigarettes. I don't drink either, but I don't have the money for booze. You
yeah.
can't feed your dog, but you can smoke and you can drink. And let me tell you, the way this woman smelled, she'd had more than one beer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, seriously? Seriously? It infuriates me to no end. Priorities. And I'm sure the people listening to your radio show don't need to hear that, because if they're listening to your show, this is common sense to them. But just in general, and I see it all the time. Oh, I don't have the money to pay my electric bill. Oh, hey, are you going to that concert? Yeah, I'm going to buy a ticket to go to this concert. Okay, so you can't pay your electric bill, but you can go to this concert. You can't put food on your table, but you've got booze.
Yeah, there's definitely some issues there. Do you think a lot of these mixed and mismatched priorities are happening with the younger generation, or do you think there's just as many happening with people over 40?
These people were well into their 40s and into what I think the man was probably in his 50s. And the woman, to be honest, I'm really not trying to be a bitch. I'm really not. But between her hard drinking and whatever else she had done in life, I'm really not sure how old she was. I'm 43, and mm-hmm. she looked like she had a good 10 years on me. I'm not sure. But... And I'm not saying this to be rude. I would like to think that it's the younger generation and that they just don't know any better, and that by the time they get to be our age, they will know better. But no, I can't say that, because every single person that we have had call us, with the exception of one, has been in at least their 30s. So I can't say that it's just young people calling us. I've only had one girl who I would say was maybe 18, 19, 20, somewhere around in there, and she called me just so I could get her all set up with her pet. Giggled the whole time, said that she had no clue how she was going to take care of this cat. She hadn't owned one since she was a little girl, and she needed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent her to a local animal agency, and I said, have them write out a game plan for you. I said, you understand you're going to have to be able to take care of this pet. Oh, I know. And I thought, no, darling, you don't know. So
yeah, because I think people take on pets sometimes, and they just don't realize that there's a commitment that goes with that.
I keep seeing on Facebook, I've had the person surrendered their pet because they don't have time for them anymore. That is probably the lamest and most infuriating, one of the lamest and most infuriating excuses I've ever heard. You don't have time for your pet. I'm sure you have time to go hang out with your friends, though.
Yeah.
Sure, you have time to go to the movies. You have time to go have a few drinks with the guys or the girls, but you don't have time for your pet. Nice.
You know, I had an iguana for 18 years, and she eventually got an infection on her tail that would not heal, so she was put down. She wasn't thriving any longer because of that. But when I initially had gotten her, I was living in Washington, D.C., and, I mean, this iguana had everything she needed. I mean, you know, I really spent the money so she'd have the proper cage, so she was always warm. But I thought to myself, the best thing that I could have done for this pet was not have her at all, because I felt so guilty after speaking to a scientist from the Smithsonian who explained all the reasons why these tropical animals should never live in an area that is not tropical. You know, it's just an area where we have to create an artificial environment for them, and they can't, you know, eventually they can't thrive. And he said to me something to the effect that that my iguana could have lived in, if she had been kept in good health, for 25 or more years. And I encourage people, if you cannot create the environment for that animal to thrive, if it becomes too difficult, then you shouldn't have that animal. So that's, you have to look at the animal before you take the animal and find out what conditions it needs to live in. Ask yourself the question, can you provide that? And also learn about the length of life for that animal. How long could that animal possibly live, and are you willing to make that kind of commitment to keep that animal, you know? So into its elder years until it passes. So I would always encourage anybody, before you take a pet, to think long and hard about those questions before you take. Am I right? Am I on the right track?
Oh, you're absolutely
definitely
right, Anita. But I think anyone listening, I think anyone listening to your show though already knows that the message that we need to get out is to these people that live in what I'm going to call the fantasy world of where everything in life is like movies.
Right,
and no matter
right.
what happens, everything ends up being perfect, and it's happy, sunshiny, butterflies, and there's rainbows at the end of the movie with beautiful music coming up, and the hills are alive with the sound of music, and blah, blah, blah. And real life isn't like that. I've seen incidences on Facebook where people have given up puppies because they're too active, really.
They're
what
too
do you
active?
Think the pup? Yes, they're too active. They run around
they
too
don't,
much.
They don't
want
to take
down.
The time to train their new puppies or kittens or whatever.
Oh, but God forbid they adopt a senior dog. Oh, can't have one of those.
Mm-hmm.
No, because they're old and they're ugly and they don't look good. We want a cute little puppy. Oh, but you want a cute little puppy that you don't want it to jump. You don't want it to bark. You don't want it to need to go outside. You want it to be like this puppy in the movie that sits there with its tail wagging and its tongue hanging out, and that's what it does all day, every day.
Wow. And see, that's a commitment. When you take a puppy on, you have agreed to train that puppy so that puppy can live, can cohabitate with you in a safe manner and cohabitate, I mean, be a neighbor to others. In other words, you don't want a dog that's going to be biting people. You have to train it so it's not going to bite. So it knows the difference between puppy play and what it can do with humans and what it can't do with humans. I had a big issue when we first got Bear, our German Shepherd, and, you know, we were working at the time, both of us out of the house, probably 10 hours a day, and it was really hard to schedule what we needed to do for a very, very active German Shepherd puppy. So we told Lisa this the other day. Lisa, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
We bought a white couch, and we came home one night, and that couch was eaten. Our German Shepherd had eaten the couch and taken the stuffing out of it, and it was destroyed. So
aww.
We did not know what to do. We took Bear up to, I don't remember the name of the vet place, but it was run by two Air Force veterans that had been canine handlers in the security police for the Air Force. And they had gotten out and gone and practiced together, and they were veterinarians. And the first thing they said was, you need to take an hour out of every morning and walk this dog, get him tired out, and then take another half an hour and play ball, or devote, you know, a half an hour just to play before you even leave the house with him. And he said, that's a commitment you have to make to the dog. or the dog is going to be forever frustrated, and then he could end up getting mean because his movement is restricted, and these are dogs that need to run. And we gave him, after that, we were very, very serious. He got a run, like every couple of days, a really, really good run. And we followed the veterinarian's advice, and he also recommended us a trainer. So we put a lot of money into training this dog, too, and believe me, we got the perfect pet. At the end of the deal, we had the perfect pet, and we never had
another. Of course you did. It's like what's going to happen if you have a child and you don't train your child? What do you think is going to happen? I mean, a lot of people don't seem to understand the correlation. Just like you can't leave a two-legged child to raise itself, why do people think that a four-legged child can raise itself? I tell people, and I've had people say, oh, people who say that it's harder to raise a pet than it is a child, you have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, we do, because there comes a certain time, and anyone who says that it's not harder to raise a four-legged pet than it is a child is an idiot. And I will take any amount of hate mail people want to send me for saying that, but it's true. There comes a time when at a certain point your child can understand you and can mind and can do what you tell it to do. There is never going to be a time that your dog can dress itself, feed itself, clean up after itself. So, yeah, raising a four-legged child is a whole lot harder than raising a two-legged child.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And like I said, people are free to disagree. Send me all the hate mail you want. I don't care. I was a stepmom. My husband had children when I married him. My youngest stepson was 2 and a half, and I helped to raise him, and I can tell you, it was a lot harder raising the dog that we had, whom we lost 3 years ago. He went to Rainbow Bridge. It was a lot harder raising the dog than it was raising him, because there came a time when my stepson started to grow up, and he would do anything I told him to do. Go make your bed, go get dressed, sit down, let's eat. The dog, come on, let's go outside and run around. Okay, come on, time to come in. Okay. Mommy said, come in. Come on. And the dog's like, oh, I hear something, but don't know what it is. I'm just going ahead and stand out here.
Yeah. I know mine are really, really hard to my little dogs are harder, I think, than the big dog. But right now we have the behavior issue with one of our poodles. So what do you all have to say about behavior? And do you think every family needs a trainer? And if they don't need, if they can't get the kind of funds or money to train their animals, what should they be doing?
Well, I'm going to let Lisa answer that, because she probably knows a lot more about that than I do.
As far as not having the funds to do it, I do know there are quite a few. There's actually this one gentleman who's on Facebook. His name, oh gosh, I'll have to look his name up. Anyways, there's quite a few dog trainers that have their videos on YouTube, and there's a lot of reference and information that you can find online. That might be able to help you, to start off if you don't have the funds, to go to actual training. But there's quite a bit of resources out there, and actually I could probably post them as well for people, or if anyone's interested, they can send us a message, and I'll be glad to give them, what I know as far as who to, what to look for when you're looking online for it.
For those of you that are listening in, if you want to see the blog post and you want to post your questions there, you can go to wisewomenmedia.posterous, that's posterous.com, and you'll see the blog post there with Andrea and Lisa's picture in the logo for the Anti-Surrender Committee, and then there is a comment box at the very bottom of the post. So you can ask questions, add comments. I did just post some of the links there that Lisa had sent me earlier in the week, that I thought were appropriate for anybody who wants to do more research on this particular topic. But I would say there are resources, but I think just the interaction with your dog, the one-on-one interaction while you're training them, is a wonderful way to work together with your dog so you have peace and harmony within your home.
That's what I did. I didn't have a trainer. I worked with my dog. That's what I did. I actually treated him like he was a child. He thought he was a little boy. He didn't know he was a dog. He thought he was a little boy. I would tell him if he'd done something bad, I would say, "Now you sit down. Mommy has something to tell you." And he got to where after a while he would sit there and he'd hang his little head and he'd look at me and I'd say, "Now you can't do this anymore." And he would act like a child. So I'm not saying that everyone can do that. I'm not saying everyone should do that. I'm not saying that everyone else's animals aren't exceptional, but I had an exceptional dog. He was so smart. A vet tech friend of ours, when her husband got back from Iraq, they lived with us for a little while. And my husband and I went out one night. She offered to babysit the dog and the cats for us. And we got back home, and she stood and she pointed to Nut-Nut, and I thought, uh-oh, what did he do? What did he do? And she walked over to me, and she said, "I am never watching that dog again." And I said, "Why? What did he do?" And she said, "He is human smart. He calculated and planned and did everything he could to try to get away with as much as he could." She said, "He was like dealing with an errant little child." And I said, "Well, that's my fault because I've raised him like he's a child. He thinks he's a boy. He doesn't think he's a dog." But I also devoted that time.
Yeah.
And my husband is retired, so he spent all day, every day with him, and he, too, treated him like he was a child. Mm-hmm. But not every dog is going to be like that, and not every person is going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I train my cats, because that's what I have, our cats. And I train them just as if I was raising a child. That's how I start from kittenhood on up, and I speak to them just like I would speak to a child or an adult now that they're older. But but that's how I train mine as well.
Lisa
saw my little one. Of course, I have a cat that's almost 18 years old, and she just sleeps a lot. She's just very she's here. She's in pretty good shape, but, you know, it hurts her to jump up on the couch or, you know, to do things. But in any case, we call her Grandma now. Her name is Patches, but we call her Mama or Grandma. And then we have the two poodles. And Lisa got to see them the other day. They're like yin and yang. The first one was Pierre, who is all white, and he's like a stuffed animal. He's just so good. And then his son, which is named Xavier, is kind of like a salt and pepper gray, more charcoal gray than any other color. And he is just completely different personality. So what would you, Lisa, try to describe them? Because you could probably describe them from a veterinary point of view versus what I would say about them. So what do you think of them?
As their personalities?
Yeah.
Well, Pierre is more laid back, and he basically likes to be held like a cat would like to be held, or even a baby. And he's more like... And then Javier, he is a little pistol who likes all the attention.
Yeah, so Javier thinks he's my husband, so he has this thing going on, this... territorial thing where he growls at anybody who comes near me, and he doesn't want the cat near me. He doesn't want Pierre near me. He very, very protective. So he has also this thing where he doesn't like to be touched from like the torso down. So we are trying to work with that and find out how that happened, because it did not happen. He was not like that before he took his first trip to the groomer. So we're wondering what happened there. And, now we may even have to end up working with some kind of training that we do so he doesn't bite people, because he literally does not want to be touched from the torso down, and we don't know how that happened. So all we know is before he went to the groomer, he was the perfect little pet, except he definitely had a different personality from his father. So that's where I'm at with my pets. We have a tank full of fish, too. So, but if anybody can ever help me with that, or if they have any insight into why a poodle would not want to be touched from the back end, I even thought...
Well, that's what I was saying. Try checking with the groomer, because that happened with a friend of mine. She said that the groomer damaged her dog. She cut him so close that she, like, razor burned his privates when she shaved him. And they ended up having to take him to an emergency vet because he got a bad infection. He was in so much pain, he couldn't sit down, he couldn't do anything. She said his little privates were just practically on fire. They were so burned. So I'm not saying that your groomer did that, but I would double check.
Well, the groomer also shaved his cheeks. And it got to the point where we didn't realize till several days later that he was scratching there, and he had literally started an infection on one side. So we had to get the collar for him and clean him up every couple hours. He got hydrogen peroxide and Neosporin, and we were able to clear it up. And of course, we called the vet, and the vet said, well, it's the same place where the vet is, the groomer. And I don't want to state the company here over the air, but they said, well, bring him in. Well, I was in a situation where I didn't have any gas, and I couldn't bring him in 20 miles away. So it probably would have been better if we had, and it probably would have been better if they had made it right. But we do know we'll never take him back there again. So,
well, it's a shame it happened, but at least you know that. You know not to take them back. I mean, if that's going to happen, because my friend will not use the groomer that she took her dog to. And I said, well, of course you can't. I said, that would be like taking your child and putting them with a sadist or a child molester or anything else. You can't endanger your four-legged child like that. If somebody does something wrong, you don't take them back.
Yeah. I was very surprised, though, that this is supposed to be like a professional place, and I was very how can I say, disappointed, because we had used their services for some time at a different location, and I just thought a lot more of the company. But like I said, I won't be using them again. So, and this again is another thing that when people are faced with situations like this, emergencies or anything like that, it's almost like your only option in an emergency, if something happens to your animal, if you don't have any money, it's like you got to put the animal down. It's like you don't have any choice, because you can't afford thousands of dollars worth of surgery. What do you all have to say about that, and have you heard any of these sad stories from families that didn't have any choice? You know, they had to put their animal out of its misery because they could not get medical care for it.
Well, I haven't heard of any stories like that myself, but I have heard of certain veterinarian offices taking advantage of people with money. I personally know of someone who spent tens of thousands of dollars to save an elderly animal that ended up dying anyway.
So would it have been, like, if it had been you, and this was your animal, you probably would have had the animal put down because of the age. Is that because of the age
and because of the prognosis. I had to make that decision last year. I lost my life. I lost my entire world last year, the day before Thanksgiving. My little bobcat hybrid, who was everything to me, she was my baby. She chose me. She found me. I didn't find her. And she was everything to me. She was the little cat version of me. And I had to have her put to sleep because she had a tumor in her nose. And I have a wonderful vet. I have an absolutely wonderful vet. And he told me, I will do whatever you want me to do. It's your call. He said, but mm-hmm. if I were you, due to her age and due to the prognosis, he said, if she were mine, I'd let her go.
Mm-hmm.
And I agonized, and I finally did. I let her go because I couldn't stand for her to suffer, and the prognosis was grim. So I let her go because
mm-hmm.
it wasn't fair to her to let her suffer, and it wasn't going to be fair to her to put her through the horrendous surgery she was going to have, and then the prognosis be so grim anyway.
Yeah. That was what had happened to Bear as well. He had hip dysplasia, and it was pretty sad. He was getting to the point where Leon was taking him out to walk him, and he would walk him very carefully and keep an eye on him, but he would sometimes, his back end would collapse, and he would fall on his back end. Only.
And my baby got very violent and very mean. The tumor was pressing on her brain. She was very, very tiny. Full grown, she was only 6 pounds because she was stunted. She was a bobcat hybrid, and she was actually half bobcat. And she was always full of piss and vinegar, as it was, due to the wild that she had in her. But as the tumor grew, and I didn't even know this until her symptoms started, she got what looked like an upper respiratory infection, and it wasn't. And she had become very, very mean. She was attacking the other cats. She had never hesitated to put me in my place. If she didn't like anything I did, she'd slap me upside the head. She'd bite me. And
mm-hmm.
she became very, very violent with me. She started slapping me with both hands. She started scratching me. She started biting me. She started hissing at me. And that wasn't like her.
Mm.
And so that was how she got. And my doctor finally told me, he said, well, the tumor's probably inhibited her thought. For lack of a better word, it was making her crazy. It was pressing on her brain and making her crazy.
Yeah. So at that point, it was time to let her go.
It was time to let her go because, like I said, he told me, he said, I will do anything you want me to do. I know how much she means to you. He said, but I can't tell you that things are going to work out either. He said, because I can pretty much tell you the prognosis is grim.
Yeah.
And so my husband and I discussed it, and he said, you really can't do that to her. She's given you too much joy. And he said, you can't be selfish. And I said, well, no, I realize that. I said, I'm not ready to let her go, but I'm going to have to.
Hmm. And Bear left this earth plane. He was, you know, he was very happy. He never got to the point where he was really, really, really bad, but he couldn't walk. He was distressed. And then one night he would get us up in the middle of the night, like tapping us, like he had to go to the bathroom or something. We'd take him out. He wouldn't have to go. We'd bring him back in. And I really feel that he was trying to tell us, I'm having pain. Can you make it stop? You know?
Yeah.
And we did have some painkillers that we would give him at night, but he would still get up in the middle of the night and tap us. So one night, Leon got the couch cushions and laid down next to him on the floor and put his arms around him. And then all of a sudden he smelled that, you know, Bear was fast asleep, but he had defecated.
Aww.
And, you know, for anybody that's worked with hospice, and I've worked with hospice before, when an older person's ready to pass, it's like they pass a lot of the toxins out of their body, usually very soon before death. And it was almost like Bear was doing that same thing. Leon cleaned him up and then took him out and, you know, brought him back in. But those couple of weeks were really very sleepless for us. And, you know, because he just wasn't getting any better. And that's when we decided we were going to take him in and say goodbye. So it never got to the point. It got to the point where it was uncomfortable for him and painful for him, but we didn't want to get to the point where he couldn't walk or he became incontinent, or because Bear was so smart and such a thinking animal. He was human too. When he was distressed about something, you could tell it in his eyes. And he was at that point where he was having pain and just totally not thriving. So
yeah.
It was a very sad day. And, you know, to this day, when I see pictures or I talk about him, I start to cry still because he's still my dog. And
I know how
funny.
That is.
Yeah, and you know, boys, Pierre and Xavier, are so different. Different in personalities and just, they're more like clowns, whereas Bear was just elegant. He was like our butler. If he had a job, he would have been a butler or a concierge.
Well, Lisa can tell you, I posted a video to my baby today. I've been crying over her for 2 days.
I was crying when I watched it.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
It's because she used to love my little Pootie. That's what I called her, Pootie. Her name was Walloom Princess Littletail, because I found her outside of the school where I was taking Kung Fu. Or actually, I should say she found me, because she definitely found me. She was almost dead when she found me, her little mew that I almost didn't hear because I'm hearing impaired. It was almost like you're it. If somebody doesn't help me, I'm going to die. I don't want to die. So her little desperate mew was what I heard, and then I called her Princess Little Tail because she had little tiny bob tail because she was part bobcat. And she used to love the song Golden Age from the Heineken commercial.
Uh-huh.
I used to dance around the den with her and try my hardest to imitate the lead singer's little girl voice, and I would dance all around with her. So I posted that video to her today. I still see her. I see her everywhere. I'll look up, and for a split second, she's there. I see her all over this house. And my husband
like
says,
"Like out of your peripheral vision."
Oh no! I'll look down and I'll see her. I see her everywhere. My husband says, "You need to let her go. She needs to be able to go play at Rainbow Bridge." And I said, "Well, I said I know that, but I can't. I can't let her go. I still miss her, and I see her everywhere." The next morning after I had to send her to Rainbow Bridge, which was Thanksgiving Day, that was the next morning. I got up and she was sitting right in front of the fireplace where she used to always sit.
That's when I see a German Shepherd, I really, you know, especially a black one, I just really am reminded so much of Bear. And then a couple times they've actually shown him on the news. Like one just recently, maybe within the past year, got stolen from the Tampa Police Department, and then they put the picture up on the news report, and I thought, oh my God, that probably is one of the, you know, that could have been one of litters that came after Bear from those same parents. Who knows? But he looked just like Bear, and he was all black. And I just said, wow, that is just... And these were American German Shepherds, not the German kind with the sloped backs.
Right.
Bear had a very straight back. So, but needless to say, when the vet discussed hip dysplasia with us, they said, you know, 90% of German Shepherds get hip dysplasia. He said they don't live long. They live, you know, 12 to 13 years is the life expectancy of a shepherd. So poodles live a lot longer. Smaller dogs live a lot longer. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and
that's
strange how the breeds. And my Nut-Nut lived to be 13. He was a Boston Terrier Boxer Pit Bull mix. He had the coloring of a Boston Terrier, the face of a boxer and the build of a pit bull.
Oh, how
and
weird.
He was something else, and I keep seeing so many dogs now on Facebook that people have given up to shelters. And I'll post, this looks just like my Nut-Nut. And quite a few people will answer and say, yeah, that does. And he lived 3 years longer than he should have. He had cancer and congestive heart failure. And, of course, when we had to send him to Rainbow Bridge, I was crying and upset and talking to a friend of mine. And he said, you're lucky you had a mixed breed dog. Now, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but he said the average lifespan of a purebred Boston Terrier is only like 10 years.
Hmm.
So, because he said his sister-in-law has a Boston Terrier, and he said, you had your dog 3 years longer than you should have. He said, so
yeah,
you need to stop complaining and be grateful.
Wow. So I'm thinking, how do we get people involved in this initiative? What kind of outreaches or maybe fundraisers would you all want to do or have done for you? Because that seems like the logical way to raise funds to keep you all going, or maybe have some kind of meetup every month or something like that. What is your immediate need, and how can we get that to happen or make that happen?
Well, actually, Lisa and I just had a meet and greet at Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
And
that was Go County?
Right. That was at the Starbucks at 19 and Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And
would you be open to doing those at other places?
Oh, absolutely, if people will actually show up. But, see, that's the thing. People, it's lip service. I'm just going to be blunt. Lip service doesn't do any good. If you're going to claim that you love animals and you're going to claim that you want to help, then you need to actually do something that means something. Lisa and I held, we had items for raffle. We were giving away coupons. I mean, we want to help, but we've got to have people that are willing to step up and say, oh, I'll take a handful of these coupons and hand them out to people who need them. And we have great little items that we'd love to raffle off, and 100% of whatever we make is going to go into buying food for animals. It's going to go into, hopefully somehow we can get vouchers so people can take their pets and have them spayed and neutered, or if they need shots for them. I mean, any amount of money that we can get, that's what all of this is going to go to. But we've got to have help. And we understand that people aren't made of money, and we aren't either. But if people want to help, that's how they can do it. They can come to the events that we have. They can take what we're giving away. They can bring people with them. They can spread the word for us. Is that right, Lisa? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and they can also, if they're interested in helping out those that are in need, we are wanting to pilot a program where we have folks fill out an application as a sponsor. And as we
Absolutely.
Receive people's phone calls or emails stating that they need help with their pet, we can have them as well fill out a pet in need application, and then we can, you know, network people together that could help each other as far as the ones that wanting to help a certain family for a certain amount of time while they're getting back on their feet, and they can be their sponsor, and then we would have the one needing help fill out an application, and of course we would look it over and agree upon, you know, whether we approve them or not, but we want to try to do that route as well. So maybe we could help even in a bigger area if we have folks that want to sponsor in their area or whatnot.
And we've also started a message board where people can post links to services that they know of, such as I've gone on there. We've posted the link for Pet Love in Brooksville, which offers low-cost spay and neutering. Lisa and I both fully support Pet Love. And I've also posted a link on there for a place where if you are disabled and you need to have if you have a dog that you would like to get certified as a service dog, which I will be doing eventually as my hearing impairment becomes worse and worse. I will eventually be in that situation. So I was more than happy to put that information on the message board. But we need people to participate on the message board. I've posted, I can't tell you how many times, the link to the message board. And so far, the only two people participating on the message board are Lisa and I.
And also, Anita, Andrew and I were both talking when we met last week that we might be interested in, we're going to check into it if the costs aren't very high, of possibly, you know how they have the green markets, you know, a weekly on the weekends in different areas. We were thinking
of
making a little booth there or a little table there with our information, and if folks are, you know, kind of try to connect with people in that respect as well.
I think we'd love to do that.
Because that really gets your information out there. You have a captive audience, the people that are coming to the green markets, and they're looking for services like that, too, to link
and
exchange.
A lot of those markets allow pets and a lot of folks bring their dogs, so there'll be a lot of people that are of like mind as far as, you know, their pets are concerned.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to outreach. They have that thing in Oldsmar going green, and I know they have events every now and then called Green After Dark, but they also have the market there, too. And that might
I know there's a market every Saturday in Brooksville, too, and I'll be going there tomorrow. My youngest stepson lives in Brooksville, and he works at the little farmer's market they have there in the middle of downtown. So we ride up there and see him and have lunch, and I'm going to check there tomorrow to see if Lisa and I can come one weekend and set up there in Brooksville as well.
Yeah, and if you go to the Going Green website, Going Green Tampa, they do have a list of all the markets that are happening on Saturdays. So I would try to make a plan to at least hit each one of them and talk to people and pass out your flyer. And I know it helped me immensely to use those green markets because when I was campaigning, all I did was I went to the green markets with my flyers and talked to everybody that was vending. And then I would talk to the people that were actually shopping, too. And somehow or other, that's how I ended up being on the Hillsborough County Soil and Water Board. I don't know how I got 82,000 votes, but I got 82,000 votes, and I did not over 82,000. And I didn't knock on a single door in a single neighborhood. I went to the places where I knew people were there and people were going to vote. Those people were going to vote. Those people were concerned about.
Well, that's great. I'll keep that in mind. I'm glad you said that, Anita, because as soon as I'm certified to teach yoga, every penny I make from teaching yoga, which is going to be called Shanti, which Shanti is the Hindu word for serenity, my yoga is going to be for people that are elderly, that don't have a lot of movement, that have damaged themselves, they're not rubber bandy, and they're not contortionist like you see a lot of yoga movements today. I know that I personally, myself, with all the damage to my body, I can't do that any longer. So my yoga is going to be a mixture of very gentle yoga, a tiny amount of Pilates, and meditation. And every penny that I make from my yoga classes is the money's going to go into the Anti-Surrender Committee. So that'll help knowing that as well to help get the word out about that. So that'll put even more funding into helping the animals.
So this would be more therapeutic type yoga.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This will be for people that, like I said, that can't move very well, that aren't flexible, that have health issues that prevent them from being able to do some of the movements. It's more, like I said, Shanti is the Hindu word for serenity, and that's what my style of yoga is going to be. It's about serenity, calm, and healthy living without feeling like you're inadequate because you can't move like a rubber band, because you can't contort yourself. I don't want anyone to feel like that. I want anyone who wants to take yoga to be able to study with me and become healthy while also enjoying a peaceful and calm life.
Mm-hmm.
And every bit of the money that I make from the classes, which are going to be very affordable, is going to go into the anti-surrender committee, every penny of it?
There's a yoga studio that I go to occasionally, and she does something similar. The instructor there, she calls it easy does it yoga. So it is therapeutic, and mostly everybody in the class is, you know, 40 or 50 or older. So, yeah, we can't do the contortion poses or anything. But
absolutely, and that's how my yoga is. I already have the curriculum set up that I'm going to be doing, and I'm also going to be offering classes via Google Hangout for people that can't leave their homes, people that don't drive.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because, you know, I would probably go to the class, but a lot of times I just don't even have the gas to get there. So
right, and see, and if that's the case, then you come on join me on Google Hangouts. The classes are going to be when I can teach them myself. Now, I'm going to try to get on at some studios, and I might have to go by what they want me to charge if I'm going to be a part of their studio. But I'm also going to try to do it at, like, the Newport Richey Rec Center. And if they will let me charge what I want, my classes are only going to be $10 a person for an hour and a half class. That's very reasonable because I've already checked around. And I wanted to take yoga at one studio, and I looked at the price, and I was like, are you kidding me? Do you know how much dog and cat food I could buy with that money to help people? No, I don't think so. And if I do it via Google Hangouts, that's only going to be $5 per person for an hour and a half class, which will include meditation, which will include soothing music, which will include everything to help everyone be calm and serene. And ultimately, it's all for the benefit of animals.
What do you think of yoga and dogs? What do you think of the new trend to do yoga with your dog?
Well, I can tell you, when my hearing gets to the point that I'm going to have a service dog, my dog's going to be right there with me. I don't know how much yoga it'll do, but it's going to be right there with me.
Because I've seen some pictures of that, and that's quite amazing, actually. I think that's I just thought it was funny. And I thought, you know, is the dog getting something out of this as well as the human? I hope so. But yeah, that sounds like a wonderful idea, and that's something I could take part in. I mean, I really do like, you know, the whole idea of a class in person. But if there's times that I can't go, then I would definitely not mind doing it through Google Hangout because there's nothing more comforting to me than being in my own bedroom when I'm doing something
exactly
like that and being home.
And other people have said that to me as well, and then I've had other people say to me, oh, well, I don't want people watching me because I'm out of shape or I'm overweight or I just don't feel comfortable doing things like that in front of other people. And I really don't care what people's reasons are. It's not my place to judge. It's not my place to tell them, oh, well, no, you need to come be a part of a class. You can be a part of a class. Do it in the comfort, the safety, whatever you want to call it, of your own home. Google Hangouts will be just as good. The lesson will be identical as it is if you come to one of my physical classes. It's not about the money. I keep telling people it's not always about the money. Yes, the money will be nice because that will help pets. But being a humanitarian, environmentalist, and everything the way I am, I want people to be healthy. I want people to be calm. I can't tell you what the stress of 7 years as a touring author did to me. I cannot tell you what that did to me mentally, physically, and emotionally. And when I retired, that was the best decision I ever made. And now that I have retired and I see what it's like to actually start living, I've gone like health crazy. And I feel so good doing yoga. I want everyone else to feel the same way. And I want everything that I do to be of some benefit. And the benefit is not only getting people healthy, but helping animals at the same time.
I like that idea, and I like the healing part of it especially. You know, I think the healing is something that we're all going to have to learn to do at all of our own different levels, because if we're not doing it now, it's got to be incorporated in there, because eventually I see that people are not going to be, they're not going to have the money to have medicine a traditional, or get medicine a traditional way. And that's going to be the same for animals, too. I can only assume that.
Oh, absolutely.
The healing is going to have to come from us and from the universe and whatever way we can do to conduct that energy. And that's why somebody was telling me today, some of the stuff that's in my life, you know, is a big energy waster. And I thought, I need to get rid of all of the stuff that's hanging on me and just become like an open channel and just be ready for these opportunities. And I'm saying that to the people out there that know that this particular thing that you all are doing is an excellent way for them to help and heal if they can get involved. So I would really love to see people become sponsors for those families that just don't see a way out and can't take care of their animals on their own anymore. But I wanted to play this.
I can tell you, Lisa and I also, we ran, remember Mr. Fancy Pants, Lisa? How could we ever forget him? The first person that this one lady insisted that we spoke to, I called him Mr. Fancy Pants, because he came out in his snappy little pink shirt and his snappy little khakis and started dictating to us, oh, well, here's what you need to do, and this is what you have to think about, and you can't allow these types of people. And Lisa and I both, we were just like, oh, okay, well, thanks for your time. Bye, I got to go.
And Anita, that's the man that said, if you want to be taken seriously, you have to be a 501c3.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute. What is the plus? What are some of the pluses of being a 501c3, and what are some of the drawbacks of being a 501c3? So I already know how I feel, but tell our listeners what you all feel about that.
I don't think it's any of anybody's business what Lisa and I are doing to help people, because we're not a business. We're just two women who are helping people out of our own pockets and out of our own wanting people to have what they need. So I don't see why we have to have any kind of designation to do that.
It's just a way that the government would try to be in control of whatever everybody's doing.
And I agree, because the minute you become a 501c3, your mouth is clamped shut in regards to politics and a whole bunch of other different issues. There's certain things you can't do. There's certain things you can't say. It's very, very limiting on how you can collect money and who you have to report that money to.
Another control tactic, in my opinion, another control tactic that we don't want to be involved in.
And I had a friend of mine tell me, oh, well, you need to be a 501c3, because then people are going to know that you're legitimate. And if you're not, she said the same thing, people aren't going to take you seriously and people aren't going to give you money. And I said, okay, well, number one, apparently you have the wrong. And I said, and this person was a friend of mine, but I speak very bluntly to everyone I know. I don't mince words. I said, apparently you have the wrong mindset already, because what makes you think we want money? We're not in this to make money. We don't want money. We had someone try to offer us money in our meet and greet, and Lisa and I looked at each other, looked at them, and said, no, we do not take money. Do you want to donate something? Donate a harness. Donate a food bowl. Do not give us money. We will not take money. And I said, so apparently you have the wrong mindset. And she said, well, what are you going to do if somebody tries to sue you? Or you give somebody something and blah, 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 blah. Well, a friend of mine who at one time had owned quite a few multimillion-dollar businesses, she got on there and she ended the conversation real quick. She said, you're not a business, so you don't need to be a 501c3. You're not a quote-unquote nonprofit, so you don't need to do that either. She said, how about having people sign a waiver if they're going to accept donations from you? Imaginary problem solved. And I said, that's it. That's all people have to do.
So give the website again one more time. It's a Facebook page. And it's just anti-surrender committee, right?
Yes, the anti-surrender committee.
And you can message both Lisa and Andrea right there on the Facebook page. I wanted to play this song because I thought it was very touching. But I also liked the guitar in it, and this woman jams, and I'm sure you all know who she is. But let's listen to the song, and then we'll get back on, and we'll have some closing comments. Okay? Y'all ready?
Okay, great. Yeah.
Here goes.
Oh,
that was the Trucks and Tedeschi Band. Love Has Something Else to Say, and that the title of that song just reminded me about what we're talking about. Love is something else to say. These people don't have to give their animals up, you know, because they love them. There's another option. And I just love that band. I don't know if you guys have heard of them before. Have you?
Mm-mm. No, I haven't.
That is Susan Tedeschi and and Derek Trucks. Derek Trucks was the childhood prodigy. His uncle, I think it was Butch Trucks from the Allman Brothers Band. So he was literally,
cool.
He was playing slide guitar with the Allman Brothers when he was like 13 years old. So he would go on tour with them and everything. And Susan was doing her own blues thing, and they happened to hook up and get married. Now they got kids, but then they put their bands together. So now they're called the Trucks Tedeschi Band, and they just came out with a new album. I'm trying to think of the name of it. Revelator, I think. But many, many men really give her the credit that she's due, a lot of male musicians, because no female shreds a guitar like she does. And then nobody plays slide like Derek Trucks. He's just pretty amazing. And if you go to some of their videos, you'll see a lot of the comments. Like one guy writes here, high heels on a wah-wah pedal. He's going, yowzers. It's pretty funny. But that was the song I wanted to play in the very beginning, and I couldn't get it queued up. But I thought, oh, I still got to play it during the show, at least that one song. So let's talk about how we can do these next benefits. I think that there's probably a lot of things going on in Tampa where something, the green markets we've already discussed, but different open forums that would be willing to host like an evening, come out and meet the, committee and think, you know, like I was thinking Sacred Grounds. I think that would be a perfect place to have like maybe a fundraiser, or maybe bands that would be willing to play and maybe donate some products like food and things like that. What do you all think about that?
Lisa and I have meetings every couple of weeks or so, so we'll have to get together and discuss this because we definitely want to include the community. And what we'd really like to do, not to be totally inclusive and exclude anyone, but we would really like to start getting the people of Pasco County more involved.
We've got a caller
on
the line.
This is where a lot of the need is.
Hang on, let me flip this caller on. Hang on, they're from 802 area code.
Oh, okay.
Hello, caller. Can you tell us your name and where you're from?
Hi, Anita. It's Ellen from Vermont.
Hey, Ellen, how are you doing? Oh, I'm so glad you were listening in.
Listen to this. And I've been listening for a while, and I think it's great what you guys are doing down there. Fabulous. Good for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is anybody doing that up there where you are in Vermont?
Not that I know of. But I don't know. I don't think we don't have the population that you do down there. You know what I mean?
That's true, too.
You know,
yeah,
it's
and a lot
like,
of the people, I don't know the numbers are, the numbers there for unemployment or for being underemployed. I don't know how that would affect you up there in Vermont.
It's pretty bad here, you know. I would say the worst thing that happens here is we have, I live in the Burlington area, and there are like 5 colleges here, and what happens to dogs here, I think this is the worst thing that happens to dogs, is that these college kids get puppies at the beginning of the school year, and then they go home and dump their 8-month-old dogs on the street. Nobody wants them because they're 8 months old, and they just, you know, there's a ton of them.
So what ends up happening? Do they end up going to the kill shelters?
You know, they get fostered out. I don't think the Burlington shelter is a kill shelter, so they try and find homes for them. But you know, the shelter is overburdened, and, you know, it's just terrible.
My worst fear would be if there's a lot of colleges that they're ending up, if the colleges have some kind of program where they do animal experiments, that would be my big fear.
You know, there used to be, UVM used to have one of those, but it's, thank God, it's closed. They don't do it anymore.
Oh, that's good.
It's the only one that did, yeah. I used to have a dog that used to ditch me every chance, and my nightmare was that she'd be up there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but
I would say that even these kids, they need to know what's happening. I mean, they're just doing this with impunity, and they're not even thinking of the long-term solution of keeping the animal.
They're not.
They're just want the animal while they're there.
No, they just want to have a pet dog for their apartment, and then when they go home in the spring, they just drive off and leave the dog on the street.
Oh, that's pitiful.
It's a big problem. Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Wow.
That's just not taking any responsibility. That's the same thing. Oh, well, the dog's not cute anymore. It's not convenient now.
I'm going home now.
Yeah, right. I'm going home now. Don't need the dog. Mom and Dad won't let the dog in the house.
Right.
It was nice while it lasted. Bye, dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I looked at your page, your Facebook page. I like it a lot. I've shared a couple things from it. I'm a big animal lover, so I'm just glad. I think it's great what you guys are doing. Anita, you rock.
Anita's always
got her hand in something great.
Well, I try to have on women that are changing the world. And I've got to give you kudos, too, because for any of you that do not know Ellen, Ellen does the most fantastic nature photography that I have ever seen, and I just wish you would teach a class or something, because it is absolutely some of the most stunning stuff that she captures with the lens of a camera.
You should have me on, actually. My activist hat is on. You should have me on about...
Well, think about that for the
chloramine.
But Ellen is also a bass player, so she's played with some of the greats. And I don't know what you think, Ellen, of Susan Tedeschi and Butch Trucks or Derek Trucks.
I thought they were great.
Yeah, they are
absolutely
amazing. Some of Florida's own musicians, really
great.
Incredible. We're going to plan. I would like to plan something for this.
So Anita, is this your radio thing? Or is this my radio show,
but I'm on the Here Be Monsters network.
So you're doing a lot of different topics?
All kinds of different topics.
I got one for you. You should have me on for chloramine.
That's another thing that's been brought up, with just water in general and the different things that are happening with water all across the country. But there's a chloramine issue up there in Vermont.
There's a chloramine issue in the whole United States.
That's something that we need to...
And it's chloramine is all over Florida.
Wow. And it's probably what keeps people sick here and animals too, you know? We want to do the next... thing. I would like to really do something for the Anti-Surrender Committee at Sacred Grounds. So I would need to talk to Karen and see if there's some particular night where we could just plan a nice little blowout and have people come and bring food and whatever they can to support the pets in the Tampa Bay area and support the Anti-Surrender Committee. So you guys have like a backlog of stuff that can be given away. Does that sound like
something
you all would want to do?
I'm game, Lisa, if you are.
Yeah, if you are.
Lisa and I make every decision jointly. We're like attached at the hip almost. It's like I don't do it if Lisa doesn't want to do it. Lisa doesn't do it if I don't want to do it, which is really great because there's a lot of times that if you have a people that are working together on something, there's always one person that wants everything to be their way. And I can tell you with Lisa and I, it is absolutely not like that. It is like we both agree or we don't do it.
Everything's mutual.
Yes. Absolutely. If Lisa doesn't want to do it, then we don't do it. If I don't want to do it, then we don't do it. And it's funny because Lisa and I agree on everything. It was like when I was talking about Mr. Fancy Pants earlier, and Lisa was saying that the first words out of his mouth were, well, if you want to be taken seriously. And so I just, and Lisa and I had just met each other. I mean, we had only been talking for maybe a half hour. Wouldn't you say that was about how long it was, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
We had coffee at Starbucks in Gulfview Square Mall, and then we went and we did our little thing. And Mr. Fancy Pants was just like, oh, wow, well, this is what you have to do. And I was like, okay, well, thanks for your time. And we turned around and walked out, and I was like, I don't know about you, Lisa, but, and she was like, uh-uh. So I was like, okay, I have found the perfect partner to do this stuff with. She and I think completely identically, so.
Well,
and
I think that, go ahead.
I also wanted to chime in and let everyone know, no matter where you're located around the globe, we accept coupons, pet food coupons only for dogs or cats. If you'd like to mail them to us, we can use them to purchase the food that we use, and it's very, very helpful, and it is a way that you can help. So even if you're not near close by, there is a way you can help, and that would be very, we'd be very grateful for that from anyone.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing, is if people can't help with actually buying the product, just clipping the coupons out and putting them in a stamped envelope and mailing them, that gives them a chance to help without having to purchase anything other than a stamp.
And I'd just like to send a shout-out real quick. I'd like to say thank you to Sue for the coupons that she mailed me that I just received in the mail today. And I'd like to also say thank you to Jane, who dropped off quite a bit of cat and dog food to me. I met her this afternoon, and she handed me a bag full of food. Thank you
both.
Can you still hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
You should give your address where to send them.
You know what?
You can...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Anita. Go ahead, Anita.
Do you want to put your address on the air, or would you rather email
it?
Because
it's actually on the anti-surrender committee.
Yeah, it actually is. It's on the page. Remember, I'm a former author. But my address is out there. It's my P.O. box. It was the same place I used to tell people to send if they wanted me to autograph their books or if they wanted me to autograph anything for them. It's the same address. It is not a secret. It's P.O. Box 1243, Elfers, E-L-F-E-R-S, Florida, 34680. And as Lisa said, if you can't remember that, it's on the Anti-Surrender Committee page.
Under the About Me section, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, so you just click About Me, and then, yeah, I think that's a good way for people to help is coupons. I think, you know, especially if you don't have money, even a dollar off a bag of food is a big help in this particular time frame, you know, in these economic times. Anything helps. I used to use coupons for food, but then I realized this is really crazy because I don't buy processed food anymore, so I don't really use coupons because most of the coupons for human food are for processed food with, you know, high fructose corn syrup and all that crap. And
absolutely.
So I find that I really don't have much use for them anymore. It's very rare when I use them. So, so there you go. But for dog food and cat food, you know, I don't think at this point we can be really choosy. We just want to keep them fed. That's the
absolutely, absolutely.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
What I tell people. You know, please do not, if you need coupons, please do not email us and tell us that you only want coupons for this brand of food or that brand of food. We cannot cater to special interest groups. What's more important is keeping your animal fed. And I like to use a term that my mother used to always use, beggars can't be choosers. We are grateful for any coupons people send us. We are not going to dictate to people what to send us.
And people should be very, very grateful that somebody's out there willing to help, because like Ellen says, if this is not happening, you know, it's not happening in her community, and she's up in Vermont, and there's probably a lot of other communities where this isn't happening. So I would, if this inspires people, I would say, do something similar in your own community. See if you see a need and you don't help in some way, then you're responsible. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like you take a little bit of that responsibility on. So now that you know something is needed, now you can try to provide it or find a way to try to provide it to people that need it and animals.
Lisa and I are not made of money. We do the best we can. At first we told people all we can give you are coupons because that was all we could do at first. And then we started receiving coupons, and then food would go on sale, and we were able to stockpile quite a bit. My husband and I bought over $200 worth of dog and cat food one night for next to nothing. By the time it was buy one, get one free, and then we had a $2 coupon off of some of the brands, we were getting this food for practically nothing. So believe
me,
it all starts with one little step.
Yeah.
And that was people sending in coupons that we were at first giving to other people. And then the demand for food was just so huge that my husband and I went to the store one night, and here was buy one, get one free on these brands. And then I had a dollar off, $1.50 off, $2 off. So these $5 and $6 bags of dog food, okay, you're down to like $2.50 each now, because they had been $5, so now they're $2.50 each. And then I had like a dollar off coupon for that. And it was
it
was unbelievable. So please do not think that, oh, well, all I can do is send coupons, so that really doesn't mean anything. Yeah, it does. It means a great
deal. I don't know how we lost Ellen, but I wanted to thank Ellen over the air for, you know, calling in. And I would definitely love to have Ellen on the show regarding the chloramine, because I'm sure people want to know more about that, because that's our water is our next red-hot commodity after oil. So big up-and-coming things with water. But we are getting into the last 3 minutes of the show, and I just wanted to have some – do you have any very quick closing comments, either of you?
Lisa?
I'm thinking. You can go if you can think of one. I'm thinking still.
I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's tuned in tonight, and thank you to everyone for your interest. Please, if you have coupons, don't hesitate to send them. If you would like to drop either of us a message on the Anti-Surrender Committee page, send us an email, anything, please, please do. We appreciate all support.
And I want to say, take advantage of those two-for-ones. If you are local and you're going to be helping the Anti-Surrender Committee gather supplies and you want to donate supplies, take advantage of any kind of two-for-one anything. Publix does it all the time. We got two bags of dog food maybe about a month ago, I think Leon and I did. And when we saw the two-for-one, we had a bag already, one of our favorite brands in the basket, but we put that back and got the two-for-ones. So two-for-ones are a good way to make your dollar stretch. And
absolutely. That's how my husband and I got over $200 worth of dog food. I think we ended up spending $23 on probably what was $200 worth of dog food, all because buy one, get one free, and then coupons.
I would also
Lisa, did you have anything parting to say? We're going into the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, I wanted to thank everyone who tuned in, and I want to thank my friends Herb and Steve for listening as well. And also wanted to say that Andrew and I will be meeting, and perhaps we can schedule, you know, where we have meetings, meet and greets, you know, more frequently. And that way if folks want to meet us to drop food off to us, they can do that as well as working on with the green markets and whatnot. So
I think that's a really, really good idea, and I think doing some kind of fundraiser where people just bring pet supplies, that would be really good. If we could get maybe some local musicians involved in that, that would be an excellent, excellent way of spreading awareness about, you know, what you all are doing. I think it's so important, and it works so well in keeping the family whole and complete. Because I think that's what's needed now, whatever we need to do to keep the family complete.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Now, that's weird. It was, we were going down into a countdown, and we were into the last 50 minutes, and then it gave us two more minutes and 54 seconds.
Yeah, because that's what my time is saying.
Yeah, but it did that in the very beginning, too. It told us we were on the air, and we weren't. So I hope it didn't block us off, because it's still saying on air, but... I want to thank everybody for listening in. Please hit us up on wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. On the upper right above the blog post, you'll see donate on WePay. We definitely need resources to keep the show going. So if you can donate any amount, $5, $10, whatever you got in your pocket, just go to the WePay site, which is linked on Posteris, and again, wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, hit the WePay link. And we want to thank our sponsors too, which are Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, the Hoodooed blog, and Power New Media and Public Relations. I might have skipped one. I hope I didn't. But they are on the Posteris page. And we want to let people know, of course, just remember our show has moved from Monday nights to Friday nights now. So we will be on every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. And if you have an idea for a show, don't hesitate to email me, or you can leave a post at Wise Women Media on Facebook. If you think a guest should be interviewed and she's got an interesting story to tell, or she's changing the world in some way. So thank you very much, Andrea and Lisa.
Thank you for having us.
Are you still there?
Yes, thank you for having us, Anita. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and let's definitely stay connected, and we will get some stuff going and stir that proverbial pot in our local area. Okay?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
That's good.
All right. Well, you all have a great night, and thank you for being a part of the Wise Women Media Radio Show, and we will see everybody back next week.
Thanks, Anita. Happy
July.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.